welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan. It became national news back in June when a Los Alamos woman was mauled by a black bear while she was running a marathon in the Valles Caldera, and she ran up on the bear's cubs. She ended up with some pretty big gashes, a broken eye socket, and she told me she's had to have plastic surgery in order to fix some of the cuts on her face. But she lived. The bear did not. State law says that any animal that attacks a human, any bear, has to be euthanized so that it can be tested for rabies. It doesn't matter if that animal was behaving naturally like this mother bear protecting its cubs. So this brings up a question that is relevant to New Mexicans across this big wild state. Who's more important, humans or animals? How can we reconcile our needs to forage in the woods, our needs to run a marathon? How can we learn to coexist? Today, we're going to talk to a range of people with experience in this area. In the studio with me is Madeline Carey with Wild Earth Guardians. Thank you for being with us, Madeline.
Thank you for having me.
And Phil Carter works on wildlife campaigns for animal protection voters. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Thanks for having me on.
Guys, I want to ask you, does this kind of thing happen more often than I hear about? Are there wild animal attacks happening out there all the time and I just don't hear about them?
No, wild animal attacks are very rare in species that could potentially have any effect on humans. Yeah, bear attacks are extremely rare, as are mountain lion attacks, cougar attacks. Animal Protection of New Mexico has had a proactive program for several years now called Cougar Smart New Mexico to help families and people with small children to stay safe when recreating in the outdoors through simple steps, making a lot of noise, make yourself look big if you encounter
a cougar. We're going to talk about some more of those later. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear, though, that my fear of being attacked by a bear or a cougar while I'm out hiking is greater than the likelihood of that actually happening. So after Karen Williams was attacked by that bear, I saw some really different reactions on social media. I saw people on Facebook who said, this is crazy. We can't have bears attacking people. You know, we should euthanize this. We can't risk that she could get rabies and not know it. And then I saw people who said, why was she out there running in bear territory? She should leave those bears alone. Why are people even in the Valles Caldera? And I thought, oh, wow. What do you guys think?
Well, it's the question about whether we should be having races in the Valles Caldera is a tough one. And that race has been going on for 10 years. I'm a competitive trail runner. I've been running and racing in New Mexico for 10 years. And the Valles Caldera has a rich history of human use. It was an active cattle ranch for almost 200 years. And just in October, it switched to management by the Park Service. And that race that happened was actually supposed to happen in April and not in June. And I know there's been a lot of conversations in the running community about how can we be safer during races. And I'm personally trying to reach out to some race directors and say, hey, if you're going to send people out running in the mountains, send them with bells and have a little card in the race packet that says, talks about the Cougar Smart and the Bear Smart stuff and how to stay safe. But it is a tough question. Our public lands are all managed for multiple uses, and a lot of it comes down to individual responsibility. And every time you go out onto public lands, be ready to see wild animals.
You know, when there's conflict like this, it's hard to figure out what to do. The Department of Game and Fish, has a legitimate interest in rabies because it is possible that bears can get it. And apparently there's no other way to figure out if a person who's been bitten by a bear is at risk. And the problem is the treatments are extremely expensive. So it can't just be like, oh, go get the rabies shot just in case. It's more than $1,000, I hear. So is one bear's life worth the risk? Is taking that bear's life worth, preventing this risk to humans?
I think the response in cases like this, again, very rare to have a black bear attack on a human. And in this case, it was a natural behavior of a mother perceiving danger to her cubs. Other states have much more discretion as far as treatment of both the victim of the attack as well as disposition of the animal. In many states across the nation, there's a lot of discretion to the veterinarians or wildlife professionals who are responding to it. And I think that's something we really need to practice more of, and that this case has brought to people's attention that maybe we shouldn't automatically euthanize a bear that was obviously exhibiting natural behavior and didn't seem crazed or out of the ordinary otherwise.
Apparently, it's been a long, long time since we've had a case of rabies in a bear in New Mexico, and it is quite rare.
It is quite rare. The vast majority of rabies cases, as far as animals carrying rabies that could potentially be vectors to humans, are smaller mammals, bats, skunks, and foxes in particular. None of these animals, of course, otherwise pose any risk to humans.
And it's not just been a long time since we've had a bear with rabies in New Mexico. It's been a long time since we've had a bear with rabies in the wild population in North America.
Madeline, you mentioned that you are a trail runner. And I talked to Karen Williams, and I invited her on the show, but you know she is an emergency room nurse, and she works a crazy schedule, so she couldn't be in the studio with us. But, you know, she told me that she thinks the state should pay for these rabies shots, that they should use money out of, I don't know what fund, to pay for people. Would it be a concern for you to drum up $1,000 for those rabies shots if you were bitten?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think that's really tough. She also told me that she is talking to some state lawmakers about trying to change the law because, as you mentioned, Phil, it does specify that they are required to euthanize these bears, and they do not, they're not even able to exercise the discretion that you mentioned. Is that issue something that you guys will be working on? Or, Madeline, I guess, do you do that kind of work?
Well, Phil can sort of answer this question. We're working in a coalition of conservation groups.
Yeah, working among all the environmental groups who monitor conservation of large carnivore species to really get a handle on what is the best path forward now that this case has brought so much attention to the issue. And we're grateful to Karen for using her unfortunate incident to bring more light onto this. I think it's going to be a case of people ultimately standing up and saying, no, that this isn't fair. This isn't right management to separate a mother from her cubs and euthanize the mother, basically orphaning these particular cubs.
And it actually costs the state $6,000 per cub to rehabilitate them and put them back out in the wild. I think we've got four right now that this state is rehabilitating. It's kind of a lot of money for us, too. I mean, there's financial concerns. There's also a history of the West and taming the West for humans is part of our heritage. Ranching is part of our heritage. Now we're going to talk to someone who lives that life. Joining us by phone is Gerald Chacon, a rancher who runs cattle on land in Rio Arriba County near Saboya. He's also on the board of directors of the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association. Welcome to the show, Gerald.
Good morning, Gwyneth. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. We want to know, you know, in that kind of wild land where you have your cattle, what kind of big animals with big teeth have you got out there? What kind of predators are you dealing with?
Well, we have all of the typical animals that you'd see in the mountain country or in the high desert here in New Mexico, cougars and black bear, coyotes. Those are the primary animals that are of concern.
I know when you're raising cattle, the most difficult time is in the spring when the cows have their calves, and those little calves are so vulnerable. Gerald, your cattle run over kind of a big area, and you're not looking at them every minute of every day. How can you tell when something is preying on your calves? What do you see? What's the evidence?
Well, mother cows are very protective like any other wild or animal species. Whenever they show up without their calves, sometimes they have what we call a tight bag. You know, their udders are large and they haven't been suckled, and you know that their calf is missing. They may be bawling and looking all over for the calf. It's very obvious whenever they lose a calf, and typically that's the sign that you see there. It's sometimes you find a calf carcass, but it's rare that you do. There's just a lot of country out there. It's hard to cover it all or to see actual evidence of it. But the obvious thing is the mother cows are very distraught. They're looking all over for their calves. They're bawling for them for a few days, and then after that, they eventually forget about them. But nonetheless, it's pretty obvious whenever they show up that way.
Well, that's a really emotional, event, I'm sure, for a cow, as you can tell from the noises they're making. And gosh, it's making me sad thinking about it. But what does this mean for you from a financial perspective? I mean, what is this impact to you when you lose a calf? How much money are we talking about here?
Well, it depends, of course, on the market. We're, in the cattle industry, we're market takers. We can't demand the price that we'd like to have, like an automobile manufacturer is. So at this current time, the calves are worth about $800 to $900 a piece. They've been as high as nearly $1,200 a piece. And when you make a living from that, and, most producers in the state are not large producers and things, and kind of dependent on the extra money or totally from the income from livestock, and it certainly is a hit to the pocketbook.
Yeah, losing a couple of calves could be a couple of $1,000. That does make a big difference. So what do you do when you figure out, okay, I'm losing calves. I have seen, a coyote or this, you have evidence that there's some sort of critter there. What can you do?
Well, we've been dealing with predators and living with them for a long, long time, and we've been on the same ranch for 141 years now, and prior to that on our land grant since 1806. So all of those critters are still out there, and certainly, we've learned that you're going to lose some, but whenever it gets excessive, what I usually do is I talk to the animal damage control officers that we have here in the area. They're professionals. They can very much target the animals that are causing the problem. Typically, it's coyotes. It's rare that we ever have problems with bears or with cougars. And if a cougar kills something, it's usually they hide the carcass and all, or drag it up in a tree or something, and you don't ever find it. But coyotes are the ones that are more of a problem for us, and we don't have too much trouble with it. They basically are predating on small calves, baby calves, and we use animal damage control professionals in order to get the situation taken care of. They can target the offending animal. They don't have to do indiscriminate sorts of control. And, it usually gets taken care of very quickly.
So when you say you call a professional, you mean a trapper as opposed to poisoning them?
Well, they use various methods in order to control. It's up to them to decide how to do that. And so they are paid professional employees of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They're highly skilled at what they do, and they use various methods, some of them lethal, and some they can do things to help scare them away or whatever.
Folks, we are talking about living with lions and tigers and bears. Okay, no tigers. But people all over this state live and work and play pretty close to the area where mountain lions, bears, and coyotes live. What are you doing to coexist peacefully with these critters? We want to know about your experiences with wild animals. So call us now. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866. You can call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org and find us on social media. Gerald, I wanted to ask you, has the pressure from predators changed since you've been around on this ranch, or from what you heard from your predecessors there? Are you getting more cattle taken, fewer? Is it different?
No, there really hasn't been a significant difference. Actually, where we've had more significant trouble is from packs of dogs. There's a lot of problems that happen from people who turn their dogs loose, don't keep them penned up at night and that sort of thing. They pack up and run around, and we've had a lot of calves killed by dogs from neighboring areas there and that sort of thing. But as far as more problems with the predators that we have in our area, we've not seen an increase. It's usually pretty steady.
Madeline, Phil, are you guys hearing about more incidents like this? Madeline, I know you're working with the wolves down in the Gila, and we're going to talk more about that in a little bit. But in terms of some of the other animals, have you guys heard anything?
You know, I don't think, I tend to not hear that there's an increase from 40 years ago. I think year to year it varies depending on where water sources are available to animals and whether people are ranching in the same places. There is sort of, not everyone is like Gerald, where they've been on the same ranch for close to 200 years. There are people who are new to an area and suddenly seeing something. And probably the biggest problem I do hear about are those feral dogs and people's dogs. Those create a huge problem for ranchers. I tend to work down in the Catron County and Grant County and Socorro County. And I have ranchers who say that's their number one problem above anything else that they have. And I think there's been a slow change in the ranching community, especially the one I work in, and an interest in having more coexistence efforts. And it's less of the tame the Wild West and more looking at new techniques and strategies where we're not having to do lethal control of predators. And how can you either onboard more range riders or more dogs to protect your livestock? Or how can you change where your calving pasture has been, and how can you change your ranching practices to leave more space for the wild animals? And that's something that Wild Earth Guardians, as well as other groups in the conservation community, are really trying to develop resources to provide to ranchers to support and facilitate that change.
Gerald, you know, it's awesome to hear that Wild Earth Guardians is helping folks to change these, but does that make sense to you that it would be your responsibility to change in reaction to these animals?
Well, there's a lot of complicating circumstances that you have to consider. It's not always easy to change calving pastures to someplace close to your home. And then these ranches that we have in the West, you know, they're typically a portion federal, state, and private lands. They're very large because we're in a high desert. And so it's not really to change that. The other thing is that we have a prescription from the land management agencies like the BLM and the forest on how we graze in rotation. And those are on usually calendar dates and that sort of thing. So it's not easy to do something like that. And the other thing is some of these allotments like ours are, besides being large, are very remote, and you can't be out there every day tending to guard dogs and those sorts of things. But you know, it's a matter of whether it's practical or not, and whether it's economically feasible to do something like this. But in our area, like I said, we don't have a huge problem. It does vary from time to time there, but really, I think the place where they're having the more trouble is when you have the wolf situation, and that's an entirely different situation. And I know that the ranchers in the southwest part of the state are having significant trouble there, both from the standpoint of the animals that are being killed, as well as trying to get compensation or prove that they are killed by wolves and that sort of thing. So it's a huge controversy, and it's a very significant economic problem for people in the southwest part of the state with the Mexican wolves.
Gerald, thank you so much for coming on with us today and talking about the pressures you face from wild animals. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Gwyneth. Glad to do it.
Now we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about what humans can do to protect ourselves from wild animals while we're out hiking, trail running, fishing, or just taking out the trash. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866, or toll-free 877-899-5866. Tell us your story. You can also post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from the Antique American Indian Art Show Santa Fe at El Museo Cultural in the Rail Yard. Opening night gala August 16th from 6 to 9 p.m. Show continues the 17th through the 19th with over 70 exhibitors. Objectsofartshows.com.
KUNM thanks Radio Frequency Club members Thomas and Amber Whitaker of Albuquerque and Adolphine Carroll of Tome for their monthly contributions. You too can support KUNM at KUNM.org.
Feeding kids what they shout for can be out of step with what's good for them. Having a picky eater can make planning family meals challenging. Some parents are okay with making separate meals to meet their requests. Others aren't. Join us for the next Native America Calling, where we'll pick up this discussion on kids' food and their nutrition.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. We are talking with Madeline Carey from Wild Earth Guardians and Phil Carter with Animal Protection Voters. We invited the Department of Game and Fish to be on the show, but they would not agree to be here, and they would not give a reason why. We have an email question from Jan in Mountain Air. She says she has heard cattle calls when their calves are taken from them, and it is heartbreaking. She wants to know how cubs sound when they lose their mother. She says this breaks her heart just to think about. It's breaking my heart, too. It's so sad. Have you guys ever heard that? I'm sure there are videos on YouTube.
Well, yeah, certainly black bear cubs do make a fairly piercing sound when they're separated from their mother. And as you alluded to earlier, it's a very involved process and expensive process to rehabilitate cubs that have been orphaned. It's something that we really need to address as far as what we're willing to pay for as state taxpayers, and if it's really worth all of both the emotional stress as well as the hit to the state checkbook.
We have a caller on the line, Lisa in Albuquerque. Lisa, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just going to mention that, you know, as a person who's been bitten on the face by a dog, this happened when, you know, some years ago. And at that time, if you were had a bite on the face or the neck above, you went through 10 days of rabies shots while the dog was in quarantine. It seems to me if that's still a requirement, you know, that the bear can be quarantined for 10 days, you know. I mean, if you got to get the shots anyway, might as well save the bear's life, you know, especially since, you know, the likelihood of that bear having rabies is really low.
That is a great point, Lisa. Thank you for bringing that up. I wish that I knew, and I wish we had the Department of Game and Fish here to give us more details. I'm not sure that with bears, there is a way to tell from quarantining them. Apparently, the department says they have to kill the animal to tell. Do you guys know of any other way?
Well, I'm not an epidemiologist, but I do know that other states do prescribe quarantining of animals suspected of rabies, so it is an option.
Okay. Folks, we do want to hear from you, so call us. The number is 277-5866 in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. We just heard from Lisa, who was bitten on the face and had to get those rabies shots. We want to hear your experiences, too. Madeline, I want to come back to you because I was really interested to hear you say a few minutes ago that you had talked to some race managers about ways to change these marathons and other races in order to make them make it less likely that humans are going to run into a bear. I mean, when I heard about Karen Williams' story, I thought, well, I really wouldn't have been surprised to be out there running really fast and probably quite silently through a forest and to come upon something and surprise it. Tell us a little bit more about what you have recommended to folks who are planning events like this.
Well, I've mostly just sent an email, some of which are unreturned, to a couple of the big race managers. One is actually my good friend's father, and he directs races outside of Los Alamos. Just reaching out and saying there's a whole set of information. Animal Protection of New Mexico has really great resources. The conservation community and Department of Game and Fish has great resources. And it's especially a concern for when you have people out on 50-kilometer or 50-mile races who are going to be out for 6, 8, 10, 12 hours.
And they're running at night.
Yes, and trying to recommend either doing a safety briefing that talks about you are pretty likely to see an animal, and if you do, this is what you do, and then encouraging either bear spray or bear bells and talking about how making noise is important, and if you're running with another runner, you should chat. And ideally, this would be something that is implemented nationally because there are races throughout wild places across the American West.
Well, this isn't new information. You know, I was in Glacier National Park last year in November, and we pulled up to the ranger station, and that's a little bit out of season for Glacier, but it's still beautiful weather, great hiking. We pulled up to the ranger station, and she said, oh, do you have bear spray? And we said, no. And she gave this face like, what is wrong with you? And I said, Do we need bear spray? And she said, I would not get out of my car without it. And we were like,
oh, man, we drove 30 miles in the other direction to go get bear spray and come back. And she kind of scared us. So we clanged our water bottles. We had the bear spray handy. We sang. We chanted. We sounded like crazy people. Luckily, there weren't too many other people out there. But when we did come upon them, they didn't think we were crazy for making all that noise, because that's what they tell everyone to do when you're out there in bear country. So that makes sense. We have a caller on the line. We have Melody from Penasco. Melody, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. The reason I was calling in is because my family and I, we are farmers out in Penasco. And we raise a number of different type of animals. We raise the sheep and llamas and goats and horses and dogs and cats and chickens. Anyway, what being a farmer, they all have their little ones. And what I've experienced and seen, if you give them time, how much love their babies have toward their mamas, and the mamas have toward their little ones. And a lot of people that don't deal with animals would probably not agree on that. And so my point is, whatever they can do to save the mama bear, they really should. Because those babies need their mother, and their mother needs them. And when they're separated, we've lost some animals to a coyote once in a while. And the way we view that, well, they're nature and they need to eat. But it's the pack of dogs is more deadly toward everything, because they'll go in and wipe out your entire herd. And so if they can just save this mother, that would be great. And the mothers will cry and cry for their babies if taken, and vice versa, the babies will cry for their mamas.
Melody, thank you.
It's real important.
Thank you so much for telling us about your experience. I really appreciate that. You know, I live next door to some folks who have sheep, and we have lambs in the pasture right now. And I keep telling people who come over to my house, look at my lambs. They're not even mine, but they are so adorable. I get really attached. My next door neighbor told me he used to have problems with coyotes until he put a horse in the pasture with the sheep. And now the coyotes don't come around, and they haven't had problems with dogs either. Is there anything else you do, Melody, that helps to, you know, ward off animals or dogs that might come and try to snatch your lambs or your baby llamas?
There is. We've had quite a few sheep in one night that was just slaughtered by the stray dogs that would come down from the mountains. And so we bought some llamas. And they're really good guard llamas. And we also have a great pyrmi. And the dogs keep the coyotes away. The llamas keep the coyotes away. And the horses keep the coyotes away. And then we finally invested in an electric fence. So nothing actually gets in. And I know you can't really do that in a really remote area. But what you can do, you know, have some guard llamas out there and have some pretty good dogs. And they will take care of the little ones, especially like the Great Pyrenees.
Well,
and they really do a good job. They protect them as if they're their own little ones.
Well, Melody, thank you so much for telling about this. And good luck to your guard llamas and your guard dog. Thank you so much for that.
And something that Melody brings up that is important is sort of the compassion we can feel for a mother cow losing her calf is the same compassion we need to extend to the baby bears losing their mama. And I think it's really easy for us to feel that compassion. It's much, much harder for us to exercise it. And that's the fun challenge of working in conservation advocacy, is you try and take that natural compassion people have towards the mother-child bond that we see in wildlife and translate it into policy and create political pressure that supports a more ethical and just world for our wildlife.
Although part of doing that job of raising animals, too, is separating yourself from that feeling a little bit. Otherwise, you just cannot go on with this cycle of loss. Let's talk to someone who deals with this cycle of life. Laura Jean Schneider ranches with her husband on land they lease from the Mescalero Apache Reservation. Welcome to the show, Laura Jean Schneider.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And thank you for driving way off that patch of land to where you get cell reception in order to talk to us. You know, can you give our listeners an idea of how remote it is where you live and work?
Yes. Right now, actually, I am sitting beside one of our large water storage tanks. I'm still on the ranch, but we lease 90,000 acres from the Mescalero Apache Reservation, and we run 500 mother cows and calves and about 800 yearlings. And our nearest neighbor is a half hour away, and the nearest town is Ruidoso, which is about an hour's drive, just considering the really rough dirt roads. So we're pretty out here.
So on that 90,000 acres, what are the other animals you are sharing that land with?
We are sharing the land right now. I know that there are black bear, there are mountain lion, there are coyotes, bobcat. There's an enormous variety of birds and avian wildlife, species I've never seen before. So that's been really fun. We haven't dealt with a lot of depredation here in this particular location, but just the other night I did lose several of my hens, one that I had raised from a week-old chick to a raccoon that got into the coop. So it's still present. You know, there's still decisions to be made. So,
Laura Jean, you mentioned raccoons, and I will tell you that I had a raccoon get into my coop recently. Those are vicious animals.
I don't think by nature a raccoon is vicious, but for them, a chicken coop is like an arcade. Basically, once they find that it's really easy to prey on a sleeping chicken, they're almost in sort of a fugue state when they sleep.
That is, it's like a horror movie.
Yeah, it's like a horror movie. And then just off come the heads, and it becomes, it's more of a game and just a pleasant activity. Like, it's really enjoyable for the raccoon. He doesn't need to eat all the animals. And that's when you start to have a problem.
Yeah, that was my problem with the raccoon, was that he didn't even eat the chickens. And it was like,
right,
what is the point of this? Laura, tell me about the philosophy that you have developed of coexisting, well, forget the raccoons for now, but coexisting with these bigger animals that you can't, you know, trap or fence out of this area.
So when my husband and I, we worked for several years on a couple of larger ranches that that were on the Gila and southwestern New Mexico. I'm sorry, not south, north. There were a lot of issues with wolves, and potential issues with wolves. I think a lot of the ranchers that lived in our area in Catron County were on the defense because they had not been made aware of what this program might mean for them as ranchers who make their livelihood from grazing cattle on those landscapes. And so we kind of, you know, moved into this job and into this space thinking, okay, we can do this. You know, there are wolves here. We're going to try to not just ranch around them, but plan our management so that we can just try to get along and avoid a giant blow up with either the wildlife or the local people. And it was really challenging. We were many times, you know, called wolf lovers in an extremely threatening tone, even though none of us ever professed to be wolf lovers, just our commitment to try to manage our cattle, be a constant presence in our cattle. That was one of the key things that we found, although we did experience depredations that were confirmed wolf kills. The largest difference that we saw in our management was that we worked for a wealthy landowner who had the money to hire people to ride in the cows every day. And that's not something that small ranchers have access to. So that's definitely... that can definitely be an issue that arises. But
Laura Jean,
monitoring.
Let me just pause for a moment, because we have on the phone Paul from Catron County, who is a rancher who says he uses dogs. Paul, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Tell us what you're doing to guard your cattle against predators.
What we raise is goats. We have about 50 goats and a few sheep, maybe 10 or something. And we put them out on range. In the morning, we milk the goats, and then we just kind of shoo them out, and they run out in a herd. And we have Marama dogs that go with them. And they don't, Maramas are not a, they're related to the Great Pyrenees, but they're not a herd dog. They just, they're a guardian dog. They just accompany the livestock, and they go out and just, they're not in a pasture. You know, they just go out into the mountains and eat brush, and at the end of the day, they come back.
Paul, do you have wolves out where you are?
Not that we know of.
All right. So you think the Marama dogs have so far helped you to avoid having any of your goats or sheep snatched by a big teeth?
It happens occasionally. We lose one occasionally, and we just, we just live with it. But they're very good.
Thank you, Paul, for giving us that advice again about getting dogs to guard your animals. Also on the phone, we have Nancy in Albuquerque. Nancy, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. This is a very interesting show, and I thank you for putting it on. I'd like to make a couple of comments about animals in general, whether they're cougars, bears, or wolves. I just like to say that these animals are public animals. They're owned by the public, and they are mostly and quite often on public lands. And the ranchers have grazing privileges on public lands, and I'd just like to emphasize that grazing is a privilege. It is not a right. And wolves and cougars and bears, they all have a right to exist on our public lands because it's owned by the public as well as the animals are owned by the public.
Nancy, thank you for bringing up that point and reminding us, as Madeline said earlier, that these public lands have many uses. You know, Laura Jean, who we have on the phone right now, you have a different situation because your land is actually owned by the Mescalero Apache, so it's public land for those folks, but it's not state or federal land. How is your relationship with the reservation?
We've had a great relationship. We've been here for 2 years this October. We had a one-year lease to begin with, which was kind of a big risk for us as a business, not knowing if we were going to invest all of this money in cattle and then have to find a new place to go in a year. But we have made great relationships, and I feel like people have been extremely generous and friendly, and we have a lot of gates to open and close, and people have been respectful about leaving those as they find them. And we just signed a 4-year lease with the tribe, and we're anticipating a long and productive and mutually beneficial relationship.
Laura, we have to take a quick break, but will you hold on with us and talk again after the break?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. When we come back, we'll talk more with rancher Laura Jean Schneider, and we'll talk about the things that humans can change about the way we use land so that we can coexist better with wild animals. We'll talk more about bears. We'll talk about hunting programs and bounty programs that pay ranchers back for their losses. We want to hear from you about your experiences and what you might have done to improve these relationships. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. Email callinshow@KUNM.org. Post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. And we'll be right back.
This Saturday, starting at 9 a.m. on the Children's Hour, chillier mornings means it's time for getting our brains and bodies ready to receive new and exciting information. It's the Back to School Show. Kids and parents will gain anecdotal and musical insight into how to start the school year off right. Nutrition, homework, survival techniques, and more. The Children's Hour, every Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. on your favorite radio station, KUNM.
Hi, this is Mary Charlotte Domondi, host of the Radio Cafe. This Friday morning, we're going to be talking with Santa Fe Institute scientist Simon DeDeo about the life and work of Charles Darwin and how that work speaks to the time we're living in today. That's Friday morning at 8 o'clock right here on 89.9 FM KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. I'm here with Phil Carter of Animal Protection Voters and Madeline Carey with Wild Earth Guardians. We also have on the phone rancher Laura Jean Schneider, who runs cattle on land outside of Ruidoso. I want to mention one more time that we invited the Department of Game and Fish to be on the show with us today. They would not agree to be on the show, and they would not tell us exactly why. Right now, I'd like to go to Scott, who is on the phone from Glorieta, and he says he sees bears. Scott, tell us about how what this has been like.
I've been living outside, sort of the suburbs of Glorieta, up against the National Forest, and I spent a lot of time walking around the woods. I've got neighbors who ride really long distances on their bikes in the woods and hike really long distances. Almost 20 years, I've seen a bear once out in the woods. I also raise chickens, turkeys. I've had goats. And occasionally, mostly during droughts, I have had problems with predators, bobcats, on fence. So I keep most of the coyotes out. And then when the drought is on, you know, bears will get in there. And I've definitely had problems with bears wiping out my chickens and turkeys. But I've solved that with the strongest electric fence that I could buy. And I've brought wires up and down my coop about every 15 inches. And, you know, since then I haven't had any problems, but it's also been painted and reinforced. So I just figured living out up against the woods, I'd rather deal with a few predators than be in town and deal with burglars.
That's a good point, Scott. Thank you so much for calling in today. He said, I know that was a bad connection, so if you couldn't quite hear that, he said, I'd rather be out in the woods dealing with predators than in town dealing with burglars. We have an email comment from Cindy in Ribera. She says she has two little dogs, and she does a lot of camping in bear and cougar territory. She says while she'd be devastated if she lost her dogs, she fully supports changing state law so that animals that attack humans don't have to be euthanized automatically. We also have an email question from Steve. He wants to know what the dollar value of a bear is. He's wondering whether a hunting license for a bear makes it a better decision to not euthanize bears that attack humans, and he's wondering whether it would be better to just pay for rabies meds for people. Phil, is there a dollar value on a bear?
Not that I know of. I haven't researched the issue in at all recently. I believe it's more of a sport. Just the hunting of it is the sport in of itself.
Certainly there's a value to the the pelt of it. People do sell those things, but I get your point. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not aware of any significant market for bear pelts or any other bear anatomy outside of some exotics trades, which is a whole other issue in of itself.
But people do. Mm-hmm. We give licenses, hunting licenses, mm-hmm. for people to. And they do pay for that, although it's not mm-hmm. a huge amount of money. And we've recently increased the number mm-hmm. of bear and cougar licenses. Isn't that right?
The amount of bears, the quotas of bears that can be killed, yes, have recently increased. In the 2015 state bear and cougar rule, which was voted in last August, and which Animal Protection New Mexico and Animal Protection Voters, among other groups, had serious concerns about, and are continuing to fight for more scientific oversight of the numbers that are allowed to be killed of each animal.
And part of that rule allows folks on private land to kill a bear, say, that is a nuisance. Is that, am I right? Am I making that up?
No, no. I mean, nuisances, people can protect property due to nuisances in case-by-case situations.
So, Laura Jean, didn't you have a bear coming around your cattle at some point?
We did. It was not here on the reservation, although there is a very healthy bear population here. It was actually in the Lunar New Mexico area, and we found one dead calf and wrote it off as a depredation. In our cattle planning, we account for a certain amount of death loss, whether that's from a calf hit by a car on the road or a wild predator. Like, that's just part of how we manage our cattle. And then when there was a second calf, it became in a very, very close location, it became evident that the animal was not consumed. It was essentially just killed and left. And then when a neighbor who had cattle on the other pasture, like on the other side of the fence, called and said he'd been having a problem with a bear, we did determine that this bear had developed a habit of killing calves. Sort of like the raccoon in the chicken coop, when they get into the habit of killing for pleasure, that is the problem. And that bear was trapped and put down.
Okay. And was that a hard decision for you to make, knowing that that was what was going to happen?
It was a hard decision because I feel a strong affinity to all creatures, wild or domestic, and both. And I think that life just shouldn't be taken lightly, and that taking a life is a big deal, and you should have a reason that you really can justify in order to do so. And since we graze cattle in a place that's how we make our livelihood, and since this animal had not just sort of passed through killing and eating a calf and going on his way, but had developed a pattern of just kind of going on a calf killing rampage, even if it was removed to another location, it probably would have continued that behavior. And sort of as a deviant in his population, we felt that removal of that individual was the best option.
Yeah, I mean, you're feeling bad for these calves that are getting killed, and then that's a really difficult thing to weigh. Phil, I want to come back to you briefly and talk about this. You know, I think our Steve, the email comment that we had earlier was essentially trying to ask, can we deal with some of these problems by increasing the number of these predators that we allow to be hunted or trapped? As I know they're trapping cougars, more hunting bears.
Well, no scientist.
Oh, I'm good. I'm sorry, Laura Jean. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask Phil about whether we can reduce these problems with increased hunting and trapping. I know your group does not support that idea.
Well, there's no scientific evidence that has ever shown that increases of sport hunting confers more public safety. In fact, most serious wildlife managers recommend against the application of hunting or trapping or other lethal methods of control for the benefit of public safety, rather. So I don't think it's a way to address any of those concerns. Certainly, we are staunchly opposed to the reflexive killing of animals for property issues or any sort of public safety concerns, including events like coyote killing contests that confer financial and material prizes for the number of animals killed.
Although I should mention, and we have done several shows on related topics, that hunting is a really important part of the culture of our state and the history of our state. And many people, some of whom live in my house, are, take this as a very serious part of their upbringing and heritage. We want to talk briefly to Matt in Taos, who is talking about dogs, bears, and mountain lions. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I just have a couple of quick comments. On hiking, I let my dogs off leash. I hike not on trails. And a lot of people don't know that bears and mountain lions are hunted with dogs. So when there's a big dog around, bears and mountain lions are likely just to go. I've never seen them in the woods because I have dogs. Another comment is the economic value of a bear is in the tourist dollars. If people come here from Texas or Oklahoma or wherever and maybe hoping to see some wildlife in the forest and having a wilderness experience and taking that story home to where they're from, and then people can come to New Mexico camp hoping to see a bear, spend dollars here, and that's the value of a bear. And my last comment is I want Fish and Game to lower the quotas and on their kill pot, the kill numbers for the predators in this state, sort of end their war against predators. There was the guy, the rancher you had on, he said his biggest problem was actually dogs, not bears, not mountain lions. So why do they keep raising the quotas?
I found
anyway,
that.
Those are my comments. Matt, and have a good day.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much. A bunch of interesting points in one short call there. But I also want to take Julie in Albuquerque. Julie, welcome to the show. We just have a few minutes.
Hi. I just called because I spent several weeks with my husband in Glacier National Park, Banff, Lake Louise, and Jasper this summer. And there were two bear maulings while we were up in those areas. In the U.S., the U.S. decided to euthanize the one bear, and in Canada, they did not euthanize the bear. They were both mothers with cubs who were startled by people who were, in one case, a mountain biker, in the other case, a hiker. And I just wanted to say that in those national parks, what all the rangers tell you is this is bear country. This is a wildlife zone, and you go out at your own risk, and they absolutely discourage going without bear spray. It's just a must to take bear spray with you. And they have educational materials about how to be out in the wilderness so that you don't startle bears. When to hike, you certainly don't hike at night. Somebody was saying on the show about riding a bike at night.
These are ultra runners.
And just that there should be educational materials about how to be out in places where there is wildlife so that you don't startle them.
Julie.
And also maybe this attitude that it's not just our land, but it's also that we're sharing this with wildlife and we need to be aware about the risks. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you for that. I want to bring up that it is ultra runners who are out there running at night because they're running 50 or 100 miles. This is why I don't exercise. It's clearly dangerous.
Yeah. So sort of to address Julie's last point about how there's multiple uses of these lands, something that Guardians has been working on and has been used around the West that is a form of coexistence is grazing permit retirement or buyout. And that's where a conservation group, in this case Guardians, compensates a rancher to waive their grazing permit back to the federal government, either when they're no longer interested in ranching. It's been incredibly successful in mitigating disease conflict between domestic sheep flocks and bighorn sheep. And we've done one down in the Gila where a wildfire had destroyed all the infrastructure, and that coupled with depredation issues and the size of the rancher's operation made it an appealing offer for him. And it's not the right deal for everyone, and it's a fairly small segment of ranchers, and we don't want to do it everywhere. But it is a program that we're trying to champion that addresses both the economic stress of predators and of depredation and of issues that can come up from any host of resource conflicts, as well as the multiple use mandate that it is public lands, it is public wildlife.
Folks, we have run out of time, but Madeline, I want to thank you so much for joining us and telling us about some of those programs. Laura Jean Schneider, thank you so much for going all the way up to the water tower and calling in to talk to us about your experiences ranching in southern New Mexico. And Phil Carter, thank you so much for being here and talking with us today. We really appreciate it. We have posted links to the information we discussed today, so check those out at KUNM.org. There's strategies for being safe from bears, and we're going to post some information about cougars, too. If you missed any of this program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio will be posted on our website, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. You can email us comments about today's show to callinshow@KUNM.org. Find us on Facebook. Just search for KUNM Radio. You can also follow the newsroom on Twitter at KUNM News. Don't forget to tune in next Thursday morning at 8. We'll take a close look at how discipline is used in schools and whether all students are treated equally. That's next week on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thank you to Marino Spencer and Roman Garcia, who engineered the show today. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls. Anna Landy assisted with production. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan. Thanks so much.